Welcome to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Paul Lawrence, a partner at PricewaterhouseCoopers and the co-chair of the Endowment for the Business of Government. We created the Endowment in 1998 to encourage discussion and research into new approaches to improving government effectiveness. Find out more about the Endowment by visiting us on the web at endowment.pwcglobal.com. The Business of Government Hour features a conversation about management with a government executive who is changing the way government does business. Our special guest today is Susan Offit, Administrator of the Economic Research Service at the U.S. Department of Agriculture. Good morning, Susan.
Good morning.
And joining us in our conversation is Owen Barwell, a PwC consultant. Good morning, Owen.
Good morning, Paul.
Well, Susan, perhaps you could begin by telling our listeners about the Economic Research Service and the U.S. Department of Agriculture.
The Economic Research Service is a part of a very large organization, which is USDA. The big parts of USDA that most people have heard of would be the Forest Service, the Natural Resource Conservation Service that fights against soil erosion and maintains natural resources, the Farm Services Agency that delivers services and subsidies directly to farmers. And the Economic Research Service is one of a group of agencies that create the scientific underpinning for many of the department's activities. That would include biological research, statistical collection, and the like. But the Economic Research Service has existed in some form or another since 1920, so it's relatively old as part of the bureaucracy goes, although USDA itself, of course, dates to the 1860s. So this is a pretty old organization. When we began in 1920, our focus was on farm management. That was a time when people were realizing that farming was a business and that there was an increasingly large urban population to feed, and the question of how markets developed and how the business of farming got done was very important. So we started out focusing just on the farm, but today, some 60 years, 80 years later, we have a charge that includes all the activities of USDA. And that would, for example, lead us to look at issues like food stamps. The largest expenditures from USDA come for the food assistance programs, food stamps, school lunch, women, infants, children, feeding programs. So we are concerned about the underpinnings of food stamps, of natural resource management, trade policy, pest and disease management. Anything that the Department of Agriculture works on is of concern to us. We have about 500 employees. About two-thirds of those people are economists, and about two-thirds of those people are PhD economists. So we're a research organization. We're specialized in really one discipline, and we use our skills as economists to look at the range of issues that confront USDA. We have been the economic research since the early 1960s, and we celebrate our 40th anniversary this year.
When you say you're concerned about the things that the department is doing, does that mean that's the type of research you are undertaking?
Yeah. Our mission is to improve the information available to decision makers. An important group of those decision makers are within the Department of Agriculture, the policy officials and the program managers who deal with that whole range, that whole raft of programs. We're also interested in providing information to other decision makers in the food and agricultural system, people in commodity markets, people who are trading overseas, people who are making decisions about buying inputs or environmental management questions. So insofar as USDA and public policy has a role to play in the food and ag sector, our job is to try to provide the economic understanding of the consequences, circumstances of decisions in the context in which they occur.
You mentioned you have a lot of economists there, but not all the folks are economists. What are the skills of the others?
Well, we have a hearty band of rural sociologists, demographers, anthropologists, a few historians. So they complement our discipline, but there's clearly strength in the numbers of economists at the agency.
And how do you see your role as the administrator of ERS, given the context of the employees, the skills they have, and how you operate in the Department of Agriculture?
Mm-hmm. Well, come 2002, I will have been administrator for 6 years. So in a way, my job has changed over that time. That's a long time to be an administrator or the head of a federal agency. I'm a career employee, and that's true of all the heads of the research agencies, so we tend to just have longer tenure. And in the beginning of my time, my job was really to help organize the incentive structure to the agency to get the work done. It was a lot of investment in human capital management and infrastructure and information technology. It was really setting the stage. As time's gone on, and I've also been involved, of course, in determining what research directions we have taken and where we need to be next. And increasingly, my job is, in a sense, to manage the interface between our little agency, and the outside world, whether it's the department or other parts of government.
Right. And you mentioned that you've been in your current position for 6 years. Let's start taking some time to explore your career prior to joining ERS.
Well, working backwards, I had immediately come from the National Academy of Sciences National Research Council, where I ran something called the Board on Agriculture that oversaw the studies the Academy does on, say, pesticide use or resource management, animal feeding practices, you name it. Mm-hmm. And I was there for about 4 or 5 years, and that really gave me a good perspective on a broad swath of agriculture. And as we know, biotechnologies are really changing the landscape in agriculture, and that gave me a good chance to get a handle on how that reality was going to be different in the future. I had come to the Academy from the Office of Management and Budget, where I was the chief of the agriculture branch. Mm-hmm. And that was an interesting time. We did the 1990 Farm Bill, which was about the time that we dealt seriously with the budget deficit for the first time. And as well, we were negotiating what was called the Uruguay Round, the trade agreement. So I was at OMB for 4 or 5 years. Did a brief stint at ERS before that, and that's because I had come into Washington from the faculty at the University of Illinois, where I was on the agricultural economics faculty, and I had been teaching policy and statistics out there in the Great Prairie. Mm-hmm. And that was really the beginning. That's where my academic interests and research were developed. But I already always had an angle on policy. My economics training at the doctoral level and the master's level is from Cornell, from the Ag College at Cornell. And they had sent me to Illinois to learn about the real business of farming.
Right.
No disrespect to dairy farmers in New York State, but there's nothing like what goes on in central Illinois in terms of seeing what powers this country's agricultural economy. They felt that was necessary because I grew up here in suburban Maryland outside Washington, and I had what they call in ag colleges no farm background. So I needed something to complement my academic credentials. So it's been an intersection of all those interests.
What is it that drew you to public service? One career path would have had you now as what, head of the department or dean of the business school?
Well, growing up in Washington, and particularly I'm old enough that I grew up in Washington before there was really a presence of business and industry. I mean, it was a one-horse town. It was government. And quite frankly, a lot of the people that you grow up with, my parents were in public service. My mother's in the public health service at the National Institutes of Health. My father was in government service. And the notion of marrying expertise in a scientific or an academic discipline with public service comes very naturally in that setting. And when I discovered an interest in feeding the world in the 1970s, like I think a lot of idealistic college students did, yeah, in a way, all roads lead to Washington. The question of food sufficiency and food security comes about because markets fail, and government traditionally steps in when markets fail. So it was probably inevitable, both because of my professional interest but also my personal orientation to Washington, that I would come back. And public service is the logical thing to do here.
A number of people we've spoken to have a background in academia and then make their way to government. Is there something about the similarity of the cultures that makes that logical?
No, it's probably illogical. The university setting, of course, is unique in the sense that everybody's got a job and you can't get rid of them, most of them. I was most of my career there, I was in the job insecure category as an assistant professor. But it's not a very hierarchical organization, and there's not a very good, shall we say, labor-management relationship. What's logical coming out of that is you say, this is no way to run a railroad. It's great for producing some kinds of output. It's a lovely life. It's very stimulating in many ways. But if you're a little bit more goal-oriented as the academics would maybe think it's a pedestrian way, you want to see things change, the university setting is a fairly diffuse form of influence for most people. That doesn't mean that the relationships that you develop with your colleagues and how you learn to work with them doesn't serve you very well. But for me, coming then into a big organization in government, I was surprised by how the hierarchy works. That was new.
Which of the jobs you've held best prepares you for your present job?
I think probably it was the time I spent at the Office of Management and Budget, because that's right where the rubber meets the road, and where the decisions, the options are winnowed down to the ones that you're actually going to consider. I mean, by the time things get to that level, to the White House, something has to be done. There isn't a lot of time for creative thinking. And you come to understand in that setting how politics and substance really interact. Mm-hmm. And that's critical to know how your research can be used, because it's not a – we don't live in a world in which politics doesn't matter. It does. Now, your research doesn't pull any punches because you think maybe a politically unacceptable option has come on the table. But you have to understand what people are confronted with when they make decisions. They don't have much time. They're smart people. They're dedicated. But they're not going to be able to spend an afternoon delving into the details. So the research has to be crisply formed and accessible to people. So that really, in terms of how I view my job at the Economic Research Service, was the most important. How do I help people who have almost no time to make decisions but want to make good ones?
That's a good stopping point. It's time for a break. Rejoin us after the break as we continue our discussion with Susan Offit of the Department of Agriculture. We'll find out about the challenges of dealing with a knowledge workforce when the Business of Government Hour continues.